It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here! Tonight, let us make them remember. We are not afraid!
No fear, no fear, no fear here on Declare Your Independence with me, Ernest Hancock, from the BEA beautiful studios of Freedoms with an S, freedomsphoenix.com here in Phoenix, Arizona, IA, where it was raining. You know, we had some rain. Right when I want to do some yard work, it rained. Well, sometimes it rains. Well, I tell you, you know, one thing that we talk about no fear on this show, there's been a gentleman that's been around for decades. I remember, you know, him being in the news when I was just birthing some babies. You know, we just got married. You know, it's in the mid-80s to the 90s. You know, things start, you know, the SNL scandal is going on, different things. And there was always this one guy doing his 1 minute. You know, the last of the minute men giving their 1 minute speeches in Congress, Jim Trafficant. Now, I got to tell you, do the commercial real quick. He's going to be at the Hometown Buffet where we have our Arizona Breakfast Clubs the first Saturday of each month here in Scottsdale. Now, it's going to be from 6 to 8:30, 6 to 9, around in there. You know, dinner, $50. You know, we'll see. Maybe we'll get a coupon for Freedom's Phoenix people. We'll talk about it. But, you know, the thing is that $50, you get your meal, and you get a few hours with Jim Trafficant at the Hometown Buffet on South Scottsdale Road in Scottsdale, Arizona. And that's tomorrow night. He's in town for this. He just came from the Freedom Law Conference in Los Angeles to where Adam, we just talked Friday. Adam Kokesh and the boys, Nick Barnett, Drew Phillips, and Thomas Costanzo all went there for this weekend. Got stopped at the border. Are these guns and drugs that we're looking at here? And they let them go. How the heck did that happen? Well, we'll talk about that again. We had Adam on in the last hour Friday. He told us what was what. But he met Jim Trafficant while he was there, had dinner. And Adam is staying at my home this evening. He's probably leaving about now, going back to New Mexico, Albuquerque. He just needed a stopover. So he hung out, and this morning we had breakfast, and he's telling me, he goes, "Hey, Jim Trafficant, man. You know, he's one of my favorite political figures that's not libertarian." You know, so we're going to see how close he overlaps to this libertarian philosophy. Does he have an opinion on it? What got him going? Let me give you a quick bio. In the late 70s, early 80s, he's working for a drug treatment rehabilitation thing. Then, for some reason, he goes off and becomes sheriff. As he's sheriff of the county he's in, and Youngstown, I think, is the hometown in Ohio there, right?
Yes.
So he's there as sheriff. All of a sudden, the steel industry goes away. We start having all kinds of economic rust belt and problems going on back in the 80s. So foreclosures left and right, just like what's going on now. Well, there the sheriff has a sign off on. He goes, "Nope, not doing it. Nope, wouldn't be prudent at this juncture." He becomes popular. He runs for Congress. He's a congressman from Ohio from 85 to 2002, right?
Yes.
So this is someone that's been around a long time. And if you're involved in Ohio politics and congressional politics, you know where some bodies are buried. Well, it came up against Israel, the third rail, Israel, and that kind of, you know, big giant heap of rocks in your backpack. So we're going to go ahead and talk. Let's introduce Mr. Jim Trafficant. Welcome to the show.
Glad to be on your show, Ernie. I heard nothing but good about you from Sheriff Mack and Adam Kokesh and Paymon and a lot of different people out there in California. I'm not familiar with your program, but the way these guys talked about you, you're like the Rush Limbaugh underground with testosterone. So I'm real proud to be on your program. I'm glad to be here with you.
Thank you. And by the end of the show, you're going to CY. Now,
don't start.
Well, this is the one thing that, you know, let's get some, we got like 4 or 5 minutes in this first segment, and I just want to get some stuff that questions that expect from me to you. Here we go. In the beginning, in your government service, in the late 70s, I would imagine you were about, you were born in 41, 42. So that makes you about, you're 40 years old then or something, right? Yeah. So So you've been around a little bit. You know what's going on. You're making career path decisions. And you're working for a company that made its business out of drug treatment. Okay. Was it a government thing?
It was a government program, countywide, actually a mental health program dealing with addiction and education of young people. And I was basically hired to put and coordinate that program. It was the first multimodality drug treatment and education program in the state of Ohio. I'm very proud of that. Worked real hard. In fact, I got burned out working so hard on it. That's where I came from.
Okay, yeah. Now let's go ahead and talk about that a little bit, because you have early on in the 70s, we're right out of the 60s and 70s, the anti-war, we're going in, it's peace and love and not so much peace and love. And then
drugs.
And drugs, okay? So then you have an early experience with the drug culture and so on, and you're going, is this drug war thing working out? Did you have an opinion back then? Were you doing the right thing? In retrospect, do you see that might have been a way to go? Give us your opinion.
Well, I always felt that nonviolent drug offenders should be treated, shouldn't be incarcerated. And I saw a two-track system that exists in all of the judicial system. People who had some political influence were able to take care of their kids, and the other people were thrown to the wolves. I felt that we had a real scourge with the heroin problem and the cocaine problem, being both imports. I supported, in fact, the death penalty for major drug importers. But I supported treatment for that victim on the street. But there's a tremendous compelling problem, and there's a whole social, physical dilemma that exists. And a lot of people really don't understand that thing. And I was quite unique. In fact, people were sending – I was getting people from Pennsylvania, where I played football. I was in college at Pitt. I was getting people from Michigan, getting people from Kentucky. They started sending – families were sending people to me because my treatment program was a little bit different. See, I believe the body's in a diseased state, Ernie. But I believe that narcotic addiction and any addiction is a learned behavior. And most young people that develop a drug problem do so. Forget all the business about hating their parents and everything. There's certainly psychological manifestations that occur. But most people that use drugs like it. And if you mess with the wrong drugs, you're in trouble. And if you don't understand that, and you're flipping about it, you're gone. In a study at the University of Cincinnati, I don't mean to get off on this.
No, we got plenty of time.
20 milligrams of diacetylmorphine, which is heroin. 20 milligrams that you can hide between your thumb and forefinger for your audience that's listening. Produce physical dependence in the rhesus monkey. 1 week, 7 days. The eyes are watering, the nose is running. Now, the average length of time to produce a male alcoholic, Ernie, is 17 years. True, blown, full alcoholic that if you don't have a drink, you'll die. The woman is 14 years because of the different physiological elements. But you see, that young guy on the street who turns that needle and takes that powerful cup of hell and induces a sense of joy and evil because he loves that high, all of a sudden, he's chasing that drug to medicate himself. See what I'm talking about?
Yeah, no,
it's a vicious cycle.
Okay.
And I worked hard at that issue, boy.
This is what gives you the perspective.
And I wrote some laws in Congress when I got there.
And this is what gives you the perspective that I want to dwell on a little
bit. I'm going to have to take my shirt off here.
The one thing that I want to, we're going to run up on the time here, but I'll tell you where I'm going to tell you where I'm going.
I'm with you.
We're going on this. When we come back in the next segment.
I don't care what they said about you. Go ahead.
Yeah. Well, when we come back in the next segment, this is what we're going to be working on.
All right.
With the perspective of actually treating people and seeing the evils of and the destructive behavior that's a result of drug addiction, you had the opportunity to address it as a congressman.
Absolutely.
Was it a law that needed to be passed? Is it a healthcare issue? Is it a personal issue? What's the proper role of government? At what level? So when we get back, because we went straight from there to becoming law enforcement, a sheriff. We're going to walk this through. We're going to see the evolution up here and if anything's changed. We'll find out with Jim Trafficant. We come back on Declare Your Independence in just a little bit.
It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock.
I forgot again the music. Dang it, Sierra. That's why, you know, you got to remind me. Yeah, we're trying to bring the music back in the studio. We'll get it for you. I'm sorry, I'm sitting here talking to Jim Trafficant, getting deep in the history. Let me tell you what's going on. What we want to do is we want to understand the beginnings of a human being that goes into one of the most powerful houses, locales, entities in the known universe. What's the perception that you have before you get there, once you get there, and how you can use this newfound abilities to, you know, take care of some problems that you have firsthand knowledge of? Now, we were talking about drug treatment, but now I want to get to the drug war. As we have Jim Trafficant is in Ohio, he's treating people with addiction. He sees, you know, he stated that, you know, this is a choice. You know, somebody gets a good high on, they want to get another high on and one right after that, and addiction. So, you know, it's not stuff you want to be messing with, but I got to ask you the question.
With certain drugs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, they're all different.
I mean, they're different situations.
Well, they're, of course, they're going to pick.
But in essence, what I'm saying is a person, if someone loves pizza, they eat pizza. If someone loves sauerkraut, they eat sauerkraut. Someone likes to get high, they're going to get high. Now, what happens on the street, many times these youngsters, they start making economic issues and start running that dope and making a buck. And before you know, they're shooting up a little bit of that spoon. And that heroin, 6 months, their nose is running, their eyes are watering, they're strung out. I mean, and their life is really in a tailspin. So it's a different phenomenon. That's why I addressed it differently into Congress.
Okay, let me go ahead and finish my point and you understand where I'm going with this. Let's pick the worst one. Let's pick methamphetamine. Let's pick heroin. Let's pick cocaine, crack, the worst one. Was it effective in outlawing it, creating a black market that would fund the bad guys and law enforcement and create this surveillance society that we have now? In retrospect, as you became a sheriff, you know, I would imagine you were enforcing drug laws. You come to Congress, you see the destructive power of these substances. You know, in retrospect, as you look back, do you go, we should have had tougher drug laws, like you were saying, death penalty for heroin smugglers? You know, or was that really the answer? I mean, looking back now, what do you think?
I think it's a holistic approach. One of my first bills was a Nonviolent Offender Act. So I don't believe nonviolent offenders for their first offense should end up in prisons. And I think that the young marijuana abuser certainly shouldn't end up in jails like they did. But, you know, back years ago, someone get caught with a joint, they did 7 years in prison. I mean, it was really bad. So I'm more or less for the treatment and for taking a look at the different stratification of certain drugs that are out there. When I talk about heroin and cocaine, specifically about importation and drug smugglers, look, we don't produce any of it domestically, Ernie. It comes across our border. Now, you're talking with the congressman that passed putting troops on our border to stop illegal immigration. And part of it was to stop that drug phenomenon. Also, which we'll get down to later here, Pan Am 103, which no one in this country knows, was really about heroin. Really about heroin. The man responsible for 103 was never charged.
No, don't think we're not going to get to it.
We're going to get to
it.
But let me say this and answer your question. The trafficking bill said, if you're a bulk importer of heroin, it's subject to the death penalty on certain conditions. But on the other end, the trafficking bill said, for first offenders, they get treatment, not jail time, including the harder drugs. So I was in disagreement with some of the strong stance taken. It's just like prohibition. We supposedly prohibited alcohol and we had more of it. And we made criminals out of people. And I think we made criminals out of some of the drug element. But when it gets to heroin and cocaine, for us to just give it a blanche as a personal freedom and let the average kid out there think that this is just a personal choice, you know, it's up to me, blah, blah, blah. They may not know the dangers, inherent dangers of it. And I think we have held down to some degree. There's still heroin in every street corner. There's cocaine and there's powerful problems. But there's a lot of people who are circumstantial users. There are an awful lot of people that became strung out. So
Well, I'm looking at the profit motive.
It's tough. Look, you can't legislate morality and behavior. You have to provide basic guidelines to protect the society.
So we can spend 2 hours on that.
Yeah, we could.
Well, no. I want to get to the. We want to move on, but I want to get to the nuts and bolts of this. We have a philosophy that you're espousing that by making something illegal under certain circumstances, you can have a positive impact.
Makes a demand for it.
And my question is, by doing that, did you create a black market, a profit? Nobody loves the drug more than the drug dealers and law enforcement.
It was already there, Ernie. It was already there when it exploded in the 60s, and a lot of it really traveled through our service. A lot of guys went to the service and met people from other states that were involved in narcotics, and the phenomenon spread. But when I'm talking about heroin now, diacetylmorphine, I mean, you can't talk about it in the same category as some of the lighter drugs, the marijuana. Not saying the marijuana can't hurt somebody or cause serious problems, but I think that we've made criminals out of some of these that should never have happened, and some of that now comes down to the point of what are the respective states going to do about it. And I think the federal government should have a general broad policy on interstate and on international activities. That's what the federal government is for. I think the states are capable and should be promulgating and developing their own laws to a degree. But there is no more states' rights in this country, Ernie. None. And it happened with the 17th Amendment when they started a popular vote for these senators who are now running for president in all the states. And they forgot about their own states. They're not beholden to their states. They talk a good game, but they're not beholden to their states. See, in the old day, that state legislator, Blatchers, appointed those two U.S. senators. And if they weren't beholden to the states' rights, they were gone. So, not to get off the subject, but looking at the narcotic issue, I think the federal government should be dealing with macro issues, not micro. They should be dealing with international border issues. They should be dealing with commerce issues that affect the.
Let's go ahead and close up on that with this. So you would think that there would be a federal role in protecting the borders from.
Absolutely.
Large incursions of heroin and sea containers.
Terrorism and anything.
But what about going between the borders of Oklahoma to Nebraska?
I think the states should be involved and promulgate their own strategies. I think the federal government right now is a joke. It is literally a shame.
Oh, no, we're going to get to it.
Now, we're here in Arizona. Now, listen. Your guest, Jim Trafficant, passed on the House floor with the opposition of both parties, taking 10,000 soldiers from overseas and relocating them to our borders to keep illegals out, hit down on narcotics, even protect us from terrorist attacks. And let me tell you what, the Senate was against it. Your own Senator McCain was against it. Now they're all talking out of both sides of their mouths because they're catering to a growing Hispanic vote that's now larger than the black vote in America. Meanwhile, our country's gone to hell. We have a $50 billion Homeland Security agency now, and we've got open borders, Ernie. We've got open borders. And we've got soldiers over there and troops overseas going to the theater in Italy, going to lunch in Japan, guarding the borders in the Mideast, Ernie, and our borders are wide open.
When we
God
come
Almighty,
back.
Thank God for Arizona. The United States government should
when
be doing
we
what
come
Arizona
back,
did.
We're going to go to the days
and
of
I've
being a
it.
Sheriff, and then we'll get up to this, I promise. But we got to walk it through from beginning to end.
And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Yeah, what are we fighting for here on Declare Your Independence with me, Ernest Hancock, each and every day on the LRN.FM network from Phoenix, Arizona, from the studios of Freedom, with an S, freedomsphoenix.com. Oh yeah, Saturday, man, we had all the guys here. We moved almost everything out except for the video and audio studios. And that'll be done by the end of the month, and then we're going to be broadcasting from the farm. That's right. We got more chickens, getting goats, and having parties. We're going to be out in the Lone Prairie learning how to keep breathing in and out as we get through this thing. In fact, Adam Kokesh and I got a bet going. We're trying to get the details of the bet here. It's like You know, he gets one of my battle rifles, or I get a month of his hard labor if what happens before the election of 2012. And I'm going, man, there's going to be some big stuff happening. And he's like, what? So we're setting it. We're kind of working on it now is like, what happened for any political reason, you know, not for a football game or something, for any political reason, 10 million people take to the streets on one day in America. Can we keep count on that? Can we get close? Can we, you know, that be for what reason? Doesn't matter. Anti-war. I'm for this. I'm against that. 10 million. Will it happen here in America? How many million does it take across this country? You know, as he started thinking about it, he's going, maybe 20 million. And I go, no, 10 million. 10 times a million man mark. You know, for what? I don't know. Well, we're talking with Jim Traficant. Now, again, a little commercial. Tomorrow night, Hometown Buffet in Scottsdale, South Scottsdale Road, just south of McDowell. There, for 3 hours, he's going to be there from 6 to 9. And you guys, $50, you get to get all the background stories of and everything. He's got a whole bunch of people on his side for various reasons. There's a lot of ground that was covered back when he was the Minuteman. The Minuteman, he did his minute. And I remember as a young man being a libertarian activist and everything, anytime you know, C-SPAN started, you start getting a little bit of breakthrough on lamestream media, the media that sued last century, there would be the 1 minute. It's always good to have 1 minute. They want 1 minute. All right, let's tune in for Jim's 1 minute. What's he going to talk about now? But first, we got his view on the drug situation. Yeah, there's a role for government. There's certainly a role for federal government. We can kind of control it. You know, my opinion is you're just creating markets, you know, that wouldn't normally exist there. But, you know, let's get past that. Now we're going to law enforcement. How in the heck did you make the transition from being drug rehabilitation? All of a sudden you're county sheriff. Well, how'd that come about?
Well, I saw the hypocrisy to it. And I saw the real problem where, you know, drugs were so available. I thought, number one, I could slow down that phenomenon, certainly on hard drugs, and I could be a force to help, understanding the issue quite well. Plus, the town was a whorehouse. It was mob-infested, and it turned out to be a situation that I got involved with that certainly changed my life. And at some point, we'll probably have a movie here. It'd be one of the most interesting movie of a politician in the history of the country. There's no doubt about it. But happened.
Let's talk about that a little bit. I heard that you're meeting with filmmakers in Los Angeles, and they love Jim Traficant controversy. Tell me about it.
Well, there have been filmmakers interested in it for quite some time, but I was the number one target of the American-Israeli Public Affairs Committee in the 90s, early 90s. I'm the congressman that brought back John Demjanjuk, the auto worker from Cleveland, who was convicted and sentenced to death as Ivan the Terrible. It was my investigation that proved not only that he was innocent, but who Ivan really was. And I went over to Israel when he was on death row, sentenced to be executed, and had an interview with Brian Gumbel on Today's Show. And after that interview was over, Israel called me, the Israeli Supreme Court, and said, take him home. And they delivered them to me in Tel Aviv, and I brought them home. And I had a bullseye on my back because I was never for foreign aid. I was called an anti-Semite. And I believe that that phenomenon and their powerful control of the press and the film industry in this country and television has, in fact, killed any opportunity for a movie for me. My story, not because it's me, is probably one of the most interesting you'll find anywhere. So having said that, yes, I did meet with somebody, and some of the people I'm meeting with are very powerful indeed. They're looking at me as a potential maybe talk show host, Ernie, maybe even a TV show, talk show type venue. And I don't know what's going to happen, but I've met with people before about that movie, and they all want it because that first trial of mine where I beat the federal government, and I'm very proud of this. I'm the only American in history, the country.
No, you need a TV miniseries.
To defeat the U.S. Justice Department in a RICO trial, pro se, without being an attorney, full jury verdict, two-month trial. They couldn't live with that, Ernie. That was a walking billboard of anti-government philosophy.
Okay, now let's talk about this. This is while you were
and
sheriff,
boy,
right?
I had some enemies now.
Now, this is while you were sheriff, right?
Sheriff and Congress. Oh,
okay. So tell me about, let's get back to the original question here. How is it that you got picked to even run for sheriff?
Well, the amazing thing about it is I didn't. I come home one night for dinner, and my wife said, what are you doing? I said, what are you talking about? She says, you're running for sheriff. I said, what? And there was a...
Yeah, somebody should have told me.
There was a girls' softball league, and she says, well, all the girls from Youngstown State University softball team are going to play in the softball team when you're in this new league, this, you know, summer league. And here, a bunch of guys that thought I could win and would be a good sheriff went ahead and pushed me into the damn thing, and I end up in that race. And it was a vicious thing because that's a mob-controlled town. I'd be careful about what I say, but I'm just telling you this. I mean, I was... literally stoop over to tie my shoes, two guys would shoot each other. I mean, I was in a hell of a fix. But from there came ultimately an indictment and where I tried my own case. But what came out of that, Ernie, was I proved that the Federal Bureau of Investigation was on the payroll of the mob in Youngstown, Ohio. From out of my trial come the book Black Mass out of Boston, where the mob owned the FBI office in Boston. 60 Minutes end up doing a piece on that. But the trafficking trial back then was an absolute amazing thing. And if they just, you read the transcript, you'd probably wet your pants. But I mean, it was a hell of a fight. A guy stood up. I didn't like him. I said, come on. I'm not acting big. I was scared to death, but I said, get your best hold, damn it. Let's go. Because I'm not going to, you know, you're not going to frighten me. You're not going to scare me. We shouldn't fear our government. And I am very much anti-government. It exists today. We are slaves of this system. We are not free. And all of the people who are talking about freedom movements, they can't come together on anything, Ernie. As a result, nothing's happening. We must take the yoke of slavery off the people.
Now, we're getting that.
I'm getting to that.
We're getting
to
that.
But that's why I ran. I ended up in the sheriff race, and then I said, get your hold. And I thought I could make an impact. Now, here's all I want to say about sheriff. I was sheriff 4 years. The first year, there was a reduction in crime in the county. Second year, there was a greater reduction in crime than the first year. Third year, a greater reduction in crime than the second year. The fourth year, a greater reduction in crime than the third year. I had an amazing record. I never wore a badge or uniform. I had the respect. I went out and protected neighborhoods. I never wrote a traffic ticket. Unless it was very dangerous DUI type of behavior or reckless utilization of an automobile. We gave warnings. In fact, the county commissioners called me in and said, we're losing revenue. I said, I'm not here to raise revenue for you. This area is hurting, and I'm giving warnings, and I'm just not going to give tickets. And that's the way it was. I took care of the people.
Well, what brought about you not signing off for foreclosures? Well, how did that come about?
Ernie, if you remember back there in the early 80s, we had a downturn in the economy. Now, the area I'm from, the Youngstown, Ohio area, we were known for steel production. Well, over a one-weekend period, we lost 55,000 union steel worker jobs, high-paying jobs. They were devastated, and all of a sudden, the foreclosures came down hand over fist, sort of like what we're seeing here. And one of the things I'm doing here is meeting with people, because I was the author of some of the foreclosure law passed in the 98 tax reform bill, IRS reform bill. In fact, I'm the author of the burden of proof change in that reform bill, which very few people know. And I want to get into that with you because we're talking freedom.
Foreclosures, you know, from the other side, on the street, with somebody standing there, nah, not going to do it, then becomes congressman, has something to say about it. See, we're progressing. We'll get through to the present as we go along on the show. You stay right there.
Rhodes? It's the Ernest Hancock Show. Where we're going, there aren't any roads.
Constant sorrow, and so's Jim Trafficant. You know, he's seen trouble all his days. You know, so this, I could think of no other song that would, you know, be more appropriate for Jim.
Yeah, you do a good job with it, Ernie.
And you know,
I like it too.
Yeah, you know what that's from?
Yeah, the movie
Brother, Where Art Thou?
Yeah, we're out there with Clooney and
that was fun.
Torturo, that was a funny movie.
Now, the one thing that I want to get into is that we need to keep going the chronology here. We'll get into some nitty-gritty and the third rail Israel soon enough. But we have being sheriff, and then all of a sudden you're there at that for 4 years, and you know what? I woke up one day, I want to go to Congress. Now, how the heck did that happen?
Well, actually, when I won that trial, I mean, I earned so much respect. I hardly had any money, Ernie. But the people liked me. And I took a look at the government and I said, you know, I got to try these people. I got to try them. Now, let me tell you.
Because you'd just gone through this RICO thing.
Yeah, yeah. I was in 83. And
now, RICO had only been around since the late 70s or something, right?
Yeah, it was organized crime. It was a vicious trial. I'm the only man in history ever defeat him without being an attorney. And very few ever defeat him anywhere in a trial decision. But I decided to run, and people wanted me to run for Congress because I said, you know, no one should fear their government, and damn it, I'm going to stand up to you. I don't like you pushing me around, and I'm not going to be pushed around. I'm going to look you in the eye and try you. But while I was sheriff, in these foreclosures, I want to get back to that. There's a law in Ohio that the sheriff shall sign the transfer deed. In other words, a foreclosure cannot take effect. The bank can't take that property until the sheriff signs that transfer. And you're compelled by law. Whenever it says shall, there's no question why. You must do or die. Well, I decided to violate the oath, like many talk about, and I just said, hey, I'm not going to do it. I heard one older black woman called me, and her husband had passed away. They had a 30-year mortgage, Ernie. They paid 24 years at 4%. She missed one payment, and they moved on for foreclosure because the interest rates were about 13% at the bank. Well, when I did this, it threw them in a tailspin. They didn't know what the hell to do, so they put me in jail.
While you were sheriff?
Yeah, I'm locked up in jail.
Okay, now who put you in jail?
The county judge for failing to sign under oath of law, subject to law, those transfer deeds. And I said, I'm not signing these deeds. I'm not signing these people's homes away until there's an investigation. And I cited the cases that I knew that were faulty. So what happened, the people start picketing the government down there. They start marching around the jail where I was locked up. And I didn't even know this. I found
this out. How long were you locked up?
3 days. When I got out, I did an interview on a CBS national show up in New York with Diane Sawyer. And after I was done with that show and I come back, the banks were so embarrassed that they got the judge to convene a hearing outside the press in their own chambers. And they agreed to stop the foreclosures and take a look at everything. We saved a hell of a lot of homes. Now, when I got to Congress, I'm the congressman who passed the 1-800 number. After 40 days of delinquency, the bank shall give you a 1-800 number for an entity that's funded by law to come in and mitigate and work out the problems between the lender and the borrower. And that's been very successful. I'm the guy who also passed in the 98 reform bill that they can't seize your property no more, can't just come out and put a padlock on it. They've got to give you notice, and you have a right to hearing, and you could be represented at that hearing. So that was just a part of it. I also passed changing the burden of proof in a civil tax case, which was monumental. Now, you remember Bob Novak, the old conservative talk show host on TV?
Yeah.
Robert knew it?
Yeah.
He said, I don't think you'll get this done, Jim. He said, IRS recommending Clinton to veto it. And I finally got it in the bill, and I said, hey, they don't call Clinton Slick Willie for nothing. He vetoed a bill and helped the IRS, or signed a bill and helped American people, which he did. But anyway, this is what happened. And I was very strong and respected. And people wanted me to run for Congress. And I took a look at all those phony sons of bitches and ran.
And
I won.
Okay, by how much?
I'm the only Democrat in 1984, the Reagan landslide, to defeat a seated Republican in the entire country. The Republican got the biggest vote of his career, but where there was usually 170,000 voters in the district, 250,000 people come out to vote, 55,000 new registrars, and evidently they voted for me.
Okay, now this is one thing I want to get into. We're up to Congress now. You're in Congress. How is it that you're perceived? I mean, it's not really a Democrat, Republican, Libertarian, Independent kind of thing. It's a traffic camp, populist, make government work for the people, I'm here for you kind of something.
Unusual, Ernie. Very unusual, because you're interviewing the only man who was not endorsed by the local Democrat Party, the state Democrat Party, or the national Democrat Party for Congress, ever.
You know, one of the things...
Now, let me just say that. I want you to hear this. I won the primary in 1984 against the party-endorsed candidates. And being the Democrat nominee, I was not supported for Congress by the local parties, by the state party, or the national party. In fact, Walter Mondale came to speak at Youngstown University, Ernie, and his advance team told me that they'd appreciate it if I did not come to the event because they are so much opposition against me. And I didn't go. And they ended up beating the hell out of him, and Mondale was history. But let me say one last thing. 6 weeks before the election, the Democrat committee in Washington called and asked me to do a television commercial endorsing Walter Mondale. And I told them to shove their money up their ascot, and that was about it. So I've never been a part of any party, and I was never really supported by the Democrat Party in Washington. You're talking to a true independent who did run as a Democrat.
Okay, now, here's get some other things in here. This is one thing I found of interest, all right? Here we have, after Republicans took control of the House in 95, Traficant tended to vote more often with Republicans than with his own party. On abortion, for instance, Traficant voted the pro-life position of the National Right to Life Committee 95% of the time. In the 105th Congress, 100% of the time, and 106th, 107th Congresses. So you're pro-life. Then we have, however, he voted against all four articles of impeachment against Bill Clinton, which
I thought,
you know, I could think of a lot better reasons
My speech made the national news of the debate. I said, Bill Clinton may be a threat to chastity, but he's not a threat to liberty.
Yeah, that was the best reason they had. I'm like, come on, I can think of a lot better reasons
than a blue
dress.
Let me tell you what, if you're going to go after him, you're talking to the congressman, though, that asked for an investigation into that $10 million Chinese money that came through the general in the Red Chinese Army. And Janet Reno said, no investigation. I said on the House floor that she should be thrown the hell out. We should investigate Janet Reno. And
okay,
I made some enemies, boy.
I want to get to your 1 minute here in a little bit. Let me go ahead and finish this one. After you voted for the Republican Dennis Hassert for Speaker of the House in 01, the Democrats stripped you of your seniority, refused to give you any committee assignment, and because the Republicans didn't assign you any committees, you became the first member of the House of Congress in over a century without any committee assignments that wasn't in a leadership role. So I'm going, you know, I mean, you got some claim to fame right there. You know, a pox on all their
houses.
Let
me tell you what, Ernie. I could care less. I agree. One thing Ronald Reagan said, he was a Democrat, and he didn't leave the Democrat Party. The Democrat Party left him. The Democrat Party left me, too. I just didn't change parties because, you know what? There isn't a whole hell of a lot of difference between those Republicans and Democrats. Now, I had a lot of friends on the Republican side of the aisle. I'm against our socialist dependency government. As a Democrat, no one is talking about we reward dependency, subsidize illegitimacy. We have destroyed America with 47% of eligible taxpayers pay no income tax, 53% bearing the burden, losing their home. I'm going to give you statistics that's mind-boggling. 70% of our income goes to taxes, insurance, and interest. 70%. Now, you're talking to the guy who joined with Billy Tozan, a Louisiana Republican, for the national retail sales tax on all new goods and services to abolish the Internal Revenue Service. Throw them the hell out. We're not free. We are literally economic slaves in our own country. We're not free. We have an agency, Ernie, who tells the Congress their only way to get the voluntary compliance is, quote-unquote, fear. Those suckers got to go. They got to go, Ernie.
We're going to be talking more with Jim Traficant. You see, we're just scratching the surface, find out where Jim came from.
Tricky, Ernie.
In the second hour, we're going to get down some, you know, base, root, fundamental philosophy of how we could determine in the future what Mr. Traficant might do given the opportunity, because that's what I want to know. And you'll find out. You stay right there, here tuned on LRN.FM, here on Declare Your Independence of Me, Ernest Hancock, my special guest, Jim Traficant. We'll be right back. Uncovering the secrets and exposing the lies. That's what Readers of FreedomsPhoenix.com get every day. Readers of FreedomsPhoenix.com are constantly provided the information that detail the real news between the lines of propaganda about government policies and the true relationship we all have with coercive governments. Learn the true condition of our economy, innovations and technological breakthroughs in energy, health, computer science, and space travel. Learn the truth well before it's admitted to in the lamestream media, the media that is so last century. corporate media has evolved into nothing more than distributors of government propaganda, but we now have a fantastic alternative. FreedomsPhoenix.com provides constant news updates on the issues that affect our lives in the most important ways. Our liberty and our property are under constant attack, and FreedomsPhoenix.com provides the understanding behind the propaganda while encouraging the participation of our readers. Join us at FreedomsPhoenix.com. That's Freedoms with an S, Phoenix.com. FreedomsPhoenix.com, where the revolution between the ears has already matured.